Namaste and in lock catch, and welcome to this episode of One World in a New World. I'm your host, Zen Benefiel, and this week's guest is Carrie Ann Pallett. She is a graduate of Northwestern University School of Law, and she is the founder of Trafalgar Strategies. She talks about business strategy, sales and marketing, team optimization, systems and processes, and leadership development. She is the director of development programs for the Memorial Foundation Incorporated. She is also the director of fundraising and development in Washington, D.C. for the Martin Luther King Jr. National Memorial Project. She's a staff attorney and food lobbyist for the United States Public Interest Research Group. And I'd like to welcome her. Carrie Ann, nice to have you here.
Thank you, Zen. It's good to be here.
So I hope I did you justice.
Well, you know,
tongue in cheek. So in our exploration of conversations that we've been having over the last couple of years, it's been about inner development. And we each have inner development happen in our own ways. And sometimes it happens early, sometimes it happens teenage, sometimes midlife. How did yours begin, and what were the things that you saw around you during this process? How did you first notice that you had something going on inside of you?
Well, I feel like I always had a sense of my own spirituality. Well, I grew up in a home that was Christian. My father was a pastor, and
that certainly helps.
Yeah. And so I was always sort of introduced to the idea that I am connected to what I call God. And but obviously, as you know, you grow and you evolve, some of it is sort of what you're taught, and then some of it is what you're experiencing and you learn. And I think for me, I think probably when I was maybe 12 years old was when I really began sensing a real connection that was separate from what it was I was taught.
Okay, so let me ask, unpack mm-hmm. that a little bit. So mm-hmm. what I think I heard you say was there was a belief system and there was an experience system that was happening. Mm-hmm. And so you were kind of looking at the disparity or noticing that there was a difference between the two?
Well, I think it's more about, I always knew that God was with me and I was with God, mm-hmm. right? So I always sensed sure. that from very young. So I can't think of a time when I didn't. But I think probably when I was at the age of 12 was when I really began to dig deeper into what that meant for me, I guess in a more tangible way.
Experiential rather than just having the belief. It's like yeah. faith turned into, right, your direct experience.
Yeah, you could say that.
Okay.
And I think over, you know, I was lucky because I was allowed, you know, I had lots of friends who we all were also on the journey of spiritual growth. And so we had lots of opportunities to talk about this and to connect with each other and hear other people's journeys and so forth. But one of the things that I remember distinctly in my high school years was this perpetual question of, you know, so there's one thing to sort of have a real good connection with God on an individual level. Mm-hmm. But then you're sort of looking at the world and you're saying, is this all there is?
Yeah. Who else is out there?
Right. And so you begin, I think that was probably where in my high school years when I was like, okay, there has to be more to this life than what meets the eye. And I remember that there was this artist, I don't remember his name, this Christian artist who came up with a song that basically was almost titled like that. And I remember when his song came out, I think I must have been 10th grade. I remember listening to that song on a perpetual basis. There's more to this life than what we see, this concept of, because And I think that's always a perpetual question for me, as I, even at this stage of my life, and I've gone through various iterations of my own spiritual journey, is the question of what we see, what we take for, take as face value, and what is real and what is true.
Sure. Now, do you find that, that there's a difference in between how you're thinking and how you're sensing? And I bring that up because there seems to be some consistency that there's this sense that really is in the body rather than just in the head. And, you know,
yeah, I think that there is one, you know, there's this whole idea of just sort of being still, and knowing. And I think once you are able to be, it's difficult to be still in this particular iteration of our society because we're so very busy.
Right.
And so, but when you do have opportunities to be in solitude and silence and being able to sort of anchor in, there's a knowing, you sense the knowing within.
Now, was there a process that, you know, we talk about this being in silence, right? Totally agree with you. And yes, that's where the door is open. How did you get there? What were some of the things that you were able to do to enter that silence in within yourself?
Well, there's the sort of, you know, the growth of it. Well, it's perpetual, right? I'm learning even more as I'm at this stage. Because I was taught early this idea of really being able to be still, to meditate, to have times of silence, it was a part of my practice from very young. As a result, I always felt like I heard God's voice, if you might call it that, whatever that means, that deep within knowledge. However, I didn't really think of it as a thing, because it was, I didn't really put it together as it being a, I just thought of it more as a religious thing than necessarily me needing to sort of have the knowledge. But I think a few years, probably in my early, my late 20s, early 30s, when I think that's a good time when people, I've noticed, when people have sort of done everything that they are supposed to do in their 20s, they've checked all the boxes. So then their late 20s, early 30s is when I noticed that people begin to, it's like, well, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, and this isn't really working. And then you have the opportunity to then begin to explore what's the next. So I went through that sort of thing. I'd finished law school. I'd done a great, you know, I had a very prestigious fellowship, the whole thing. And then I began to sort of feel like, is that same sensation? And is this all there is again? Right. You know?
Right. But, you know, it's interesting you say that, the view, right? You kind of begin to bring your head up. In 75, when I had, 1975, when I had my awakening, I had the blessing of being able to talk to a psychiatrist. That, you know, my parents took me there because they were really concerned. He really listened well and then explained to me, you know, you're not crazy. You've had a spiritual awakening. Why so young? I'm not sure. Most people don't have it till their mid-40s, if they ever do, was his response to me. And it got me thinking, okay, you know, at that point, I didn't really care. But in my mid-40s, like, oh, I see what he meant now, because you've, the same thing that you're talking about, only it's more of the end of corporate career, empty nesters, that kind of thing, where all of those duties and responsibilities that you once had are now, what do I do next?
What are they? Yeah. You know, I really do think these moments in time are gifted to us to shake things up and to allow us to take account. And so that's what I really do think. And that's why I really, you know, obviously there's no real destination per se. It's perpetual growth. I mean, because even every week there's a new for me, you know, every week, every other week, there's a new understanding that I get around my connection to spirit and to God. But I think though that these big moments, when there's big shifts, you know, coming out of your 20s, definitely in your mid 40s, other stages in life, where you have, you're a little forced to confront because they're big shifts.
Right. And you reevaluate.
We're having big shifts every day, right? There's, if we are aware, we're actually having shifts on a regular basis, and we can use those moments. They don't have to be like, you know, massive earthquake, you know, what is it?
Right.
Whatever, Richter scale, 8 point, whatever on the Richter scale. It can be a little bit of shaking, a little bit of a tremor, but if we're aware, it brings us closer to, to that spiritual space. So I have found over time that I definitely did a thing, you know, you're asking about like, when did I begin to solidify this concept of silence and solitude? And it was when at that moment, when I really was like, okay, I've gone down to a dark space. I've done everything I'm supposed to do. I have this prestigious career. What is the next thing? I don't feel fulfilled. And it forced me to really dive into what it meant for me to really exist in this world and on the planet. And I think that was when I sort of started reading what a lot of, you know, sort of ancient texts around what people behind before me were doing to connect more. And that's when I began to realize what I had been taught very early on as a young child around meditating and being still was actually ancient practices around connecting.
Sure.
And that's how I began to make that an important part of my practice.
That's amazing and quite a wonderful journey too. I had a very similar coming out of my awakening. One of the first collections I read was the Vedas. And I was brought up in a Christian home. I was in Dimalay. My parents were pretty devout, and Dad was also a 32nd degree Mason. So I had all of these value systems in place and live in them. And having read the Bible a number of times, and it seemed like the philosophy presented in the Vedas, which was we're all divine threads of this unitive consciousness incarnate with the capacity of becoming God, right? Not the big G,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And even Jesus was quoted as saying so as well. And then in the book of Revelation, it talks about God dwelling in man. Well, this is kind of all the same thing. So why do we have so many different striations or delineations of that same philosophy? Can we just find that and maybe a core of the essence of loving and being loved in that place? Because that's really what I think the net goal is, right? Is to have that connection, and it's to love and be loved. That's where it is.
Yeah.
So how did that come about? Would you agree with that, first of all?
I think that we're all very much spirits, and we're all having this interestingly unique human experience. And I think that we are divine. We are of God because we're from God, and we are of God.
Mm-hmm.
I think though, this idea of, you know, can we all kind of, you know, get along, this,
yeah, exactly, concept,
I don't know. I think based on, if we are having a human experience, then everyone's human experience is so very different, and depending
on, we kind of need to allow for it all.
Right. I think that's where, you know, the uniqueness of everyone's experiences and how people explain it.
And
I think in the end though, right. I think I'd love for people to just, you know, my hope is that it doesn't have to be defined in a certain way, but that we all are able to connect to the divinity within, mm-hmm. so that we can, I don't know really to what extent, you know, to what extent that looks like, but I do know that there's a lot of hurt and a lot of brokenness in the world that
a lot of is trauma.
Caused for that is caused by a lack of understanding of one's own worth and one's own connection to God. That if one could understand just how much they are connected to God in a real meaningful way, I think some of that hurt, some some of the hurt would be addressed. Some of the pain that people cause others would also diminish, because I think people do things, you know, hurt people. And if you could begin to have more healed, then they wouldn't be hurting others. So I think as a whole, it would be great. I'm not saying that I think everyone needs to believe the same thing or how, you know, interpret it the same way, because everyone's experience is different. But I do think there is something core, and I do believe we're all very connected to the divine in a way.
I think where you're leading with that is to have a life of compassion and kindness toward one another, as opposed to the aggravation, right? Yeah. The bias and the prejudice that exists for self and others,
But it's very difficult to have people. I realized that even the other day, I was, this concept came to me where, I don't even know how it started coming into my mindset. I was spending some time in devotion, and it was this really, the thought was like, my body is my home, and my body is my home. And so that I kind of began repeating, and it was something that I hadn't really thought about, and I hadn't realized that I had actually almost disembodied a bit from the I myself had abandoned my own body, because I was still very living external. And this is why I always say it's not a destination, it's our continual journey of growth. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've done a great deal of connection with God, and I'm not at all, you know, but when that came to me, I'm like, well, that's an interesting thought that I didn't even know that I didn't have that thought. And when I began to sink into that thought of my body being my home, that was the message that I needed to embody for myself. I began loving, feeling more peace within. I began loving myself more. I began the sort of messages around some of the messages that were coming through me that I would always have to sort of fight against, they began to subdue just with that belief. So if you think about the idea of how much we dislike ourselves because we don't recognize our own connection to God and our own divinity, then it's easy for people to be upset, to hate themselves or to dislike themselves or be disconnected with oneself. And then when you feel that way, some people internalize that and some people externalize that. And so you have the externalization of the feeling of not being connected with oneself, not recognizing their own divinity. And that's where, you know, anger comes in. You know, even just the idea of not being able to be compassionate or being empathetic, because if you can't be compassionate with oneself because you're disconnected.
Right. It's impossible to be fully that way with another.
With another person.
Yeah.
And so I really think it's really about have a desire for people to really recognize their own divinity, their own connection to God, their own reality, that there is no lack, there is no separation between them and God. And once you kind of realize that, then you're like, well, then why am I upset about anything, really? Or why am I angry at anyone? Or why am I mistreating others? Because I'm okay.
You know, when you were talking about being in the ocean and having that voice, not your own, kind of give you this, right? That to me was part of the whole notion of cosmic consciousness condensing into form. There's a higher self that we are that is that translator or transmitter or even transceiver, if you will, as that navigation and personal evolution is taking place.
Yeah.
It doesn't make it necessarily any less spooky in some ways, right? Because you begin to have experiences that are beyond what you are used to and yet invite you to acquiesce to them because the empathic resonance that you have with them. right? There's
Yeah,
this inner
I think we know,
connection, right?
We know deep down, all of us know who we really are. It's the fact that we're born in a world where it's kind of covered up, and other things are prioritized, other pieces of knowledge are prioritized. And so you kind of just, you know, put everything away. And this is a great story that I read in a book by John Eldridge. He talks about the sea turtle, the sea lion, or the sea turtle with sea, I think it's a sea lion. And the sea lion, somehow the story starts where he's in the middle of the desert. And you're like, well, why is a sea lion in the middle of the desert? And the sea lion at night, he dreams and hears the ocean when it's quiet, but mm-hmm. in the middle of the day there's this heat, and you know, he's just trying to, you know, deal with this dryness, and he doesn't really know where he's from. He's not connected to who he really is and where he's from. And he spends all this time, he meets a couple different characters along his way. And some are just saying, you know, figure out how to make it work. You know, this is life for you. You live in the desert, make it work. So he found like a little hole that had like a little tiny bit of water and a little bit of a stoop that he could kind of sit along and look above. And he was like, that's home for him, because that's the closest he could get.
Right.
But yet every night he hears the ocean in his head. And he knows, and he longs for something more. And at some point he begins to realize, he's like, one night he had the biggest dream where he saw himself in the ocean with other sea lions and other, fish and whatever folks that live in the ocean. And he woke up that morning with a little tear in his eye. And he says, I'm heading back to the ocean. He doesn't know where it is. All he knows is he belongs there, and he's heading there. And I think that's oftentimes what we do. We don't really, we deep down inside know that. I mean, I think every right. human has to know that this is not it, right? That right. this sort of sense of being disconnected from each other and disconnected from what is God, is not it. But it's the idea of how to get there. And that's where stillness, silence, being able to be in solitude, allowing oneself, and even not being afraid to allow for one's spiritual sense to take sure. over a bit, to connect.
Right. Now, we in our pre-show warm-up, you know, I'd mentioned that we basically live half inside and half outside, and that we've got caught up in the outer, which is fine. But we've mm-hmm. forgotten the inner. We're kind of bereft of how to get there, what it's all about. And then mm-hmm. from that place, connecting to the outer, which is yeah. what your sea lion story was indicative of, right? Yeah. Of going within in that dream state, in that world within, realizing that, oh, that's really home.
Yes.
Well, how do I find that in the outer? And mm-hmm. then you basically create the outer. I think there was a guy at one time that said, make the without as the within.
Make right? the without as within. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So it's the same. We've heard this for millennia.
Yeah.
And now we've got the opportunity, you know, especially with quantum sciences now revealing that, yeah, we're all energy. Mm-hmm. So we scientifically now, we are all energy. So what's God? Energy. It's everything, right? There is an infinite consciousness, infinite intelligence that is accessible, that is individuated specifically for each one of us. Because we're not, you know, just mm-hmm. a ubiquitous one size fits all.
Right.
We each have our own specific, I like to call it perfected form, fit, and function in the world. We just haven't been aware of how to actually seek that. Now we understand, it seems. Would you agree that we're learning how to bring all of these skill sets that we've developed along with that internal understanding, and then kind of changing the scene in the outer world with a different kind of application of our skill sets toward that compassion and kindness persona? and looking for others doing the same.
Yeah.
Does that seem to be where we are headed?
I do think, you know, Dr. King had a quote. He says, you know, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. It's obviously, it's a different, we're talking about two different, you know, things when he uses that quote versus what we're talking about. But I do think that the arc of anything is pretty long, but it usually bends towards what is truth. And, you know, over time, you've lived a bit longer than I have, but I've lived enough that I've been able to see patterns. You know, it's hard to see patterns when you're 10 years old because, well, you know, you haven't lived enough.
Right.
You're 20, you're like, I see a little bit of patterns, but it's still not enough. But I think what I have observed around this is that humans are perpetually and always, because we all know, humans are always perpetually trying to find what is true and what is their true identity. I think that there's language now that is mainstream that wasn't once was. And people can now kind of begin to feel comfortable understanding concepts and using language to describe what it is that they have known to be true for a while, or mm-hmm. things that they didn't know to be true, but got a sense that maybe that was true. And I think that is a good sign that we are, that people are more talking about this. But just like anything in humanity, I have found that there is this, when new language pops up, when new understandings pop up, there is always a kind of twisting in of it and a misunderstanding of it that then makes there to be additional confusion. And I think that that is also happening at the same time now then. So you see some folks who recognize that this could be true. This is, I really do feel like I am connected to my divine. But then, you know, there are folks who maybe be like, well, what it really means, we're going to twist it to something else. Mm-hmm. And so I do think, to your point, that in my lifetime, this has been a good time where I see people are finally have language to describe what it is.
They're seeking a common thread of understanding that has a similar language and similar meaning that kind of ripples throughout the thoughtmosphere, if you will.
Yeah, I think that's probably a fair statement. But at the same time, I think, you know, we cannot, I guess on some level, yes, if you look back at kind of say, you know, the Dark Ages and compare it to now, it's a different vibe, I would assume. I wasn't there, but you know, based on what history tells us.
Right.
At the same time, my hope is for if you think about Christianity, you know, Christianity was just one of the best things that kind of popped up at a certain time, this idea that all men are equal, that we can connect to God in a meaningful way, that we don't need to have a middleman, all of these different things. And yet, you know, humans really kind of distorted that whole thing.
Oh yeah, we put everything into organizational structures, yeah. And we want to manage them all, right?
And there were some folks who are did not have great motives and wanted to use it.
Yeah, they weren't good managerial material, people. Right?
You wanted to use the religion to suppress people, which they were able to do for a long time and still do. So I think as we begin to have these conversations, as people begin to be on their journeys and people are having a language around it, it can also be, it's important for folks not to allow for this time to then be rooted in a way to, you know, manipulate people or make people feel badly for not moving faster than or not understanding or not going along with it or use it for other means. So I do think that it's a good time. It's always a good time. The arc is long and it moves towards mm-hmm. goodness. At the same time, I do think that we have to always be aware of how we are understanding it for our own selves and right. recognizing that we all are divine. So you can, it can be individualized, but it's great if there can be a larger movement towards good.
Right. Now you mentioned patterns. I love that you brought them up because we're all kind of cognitive scientists, right? We're always looking for patterns, and that's how we find our way. What's consistent in how we behave, how the world responds to that behavior, and how others are engaged in that as well. Do you find that there's a consistency in how we are kind of reframing the challenges? I guess specifically what I want to ask is, do you see that there is a pattern of what you have strong feelings, bias, prejudice toward, that you find yourself in that place, the opposite of where you were? What you're holding judgment toward, you end up finding your place in that, or find yourself in that place to experience the other side of it. You find that it's kind of a karmic thing, or I guess, or
you want to necessarily... explain that a bit more. I just want to make sure I'm clear on the question.
Sure. So if I hold judgment toward how a person is, or what they're doing, or something that they have done, then at some point in the near future, I'm going to be on the flip side of that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be in that place and have a whole different perspective of what it's like to be there in order to develop the compassion for it, mm-hmm. as an evolving being. Because if you don't, it's hard to have the compassion for the other person if you're not experiencing something relative to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I hear your point. I've had a lot of opportunities in life and where, not at this stage of my life so much as when I was probably in my 20s and early 30s, because I was beginning, because I had a great deal of judgment toward, there was a way of being, the way of doing, there's a way of existing that I thought was the way. And so I had some firm, very, 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 very firm beliefs around how someone should be. And during those years, I had plenty of opportunities to be on the flip side and be able to sort of see, oh, wait. And I think that's the thing about life. Life will, I don't really call it humble you, but life gives you opportunities to really become more compassionate over time, because you just realize your own humanity. I think when you're young, you can have certain ideals, which I think are great, because that's, we need something to believe in. But then you begin to see life show up and you're like, oh gosh, I never thought I'd ever be in that position. And then you begin to have a bit more compassion for people. I could list a significant number of things that once I was like, oh, I would never,
Right.
And now you're like, oh, I totally understand why they're like that. I mean, I don't, and I think too, when you're people like, well, I don't want to lose the things that I think are, are good or bad or, whatever. I don't think that's really what happens. I think it's not about losing your own moral compass. It's about just understanding how someone could behave a certain way or do a certain thing. And while you don't necessarily think the way what they did was a good thing, but you can understand why they did it, or how they did it, or what brought them to doing it. And sure. That
gives or understanding their own woundedness.
Yeah.
Reasons why.
Right. And it doesn't mean that you're saying, well, then it's okay for them to have done that, but it does allow for you to understand, to be compassionate.
At that point, there's still no judgment, hopefully, mm-hmm. toward mm-hmm. that. What there is greater understanding as to why.
Yeah.
Which opens the door for the compassion.
I agree. Now, I do think there are some things that can still be, you can still say, this is not a behavior that we as humans should be doing.
Like killing people because killing people is wrong.
Yeah, Right. So there's a couple of things that fall in line with that. And you're like, yeah, no, we shouldn't be doing that. That's not something that we want to encourage. That's not a behavior we want to encourage.
Exactly.
At the same time, you can understand why someone would be driven to that, whether it's the woundedness, whether it's hurt, whether it's just, you know, whatever the thing is, you can kind of become and be like, I could see where they do that. Still not condoning that.
Oh, right? Yeah. Well, and we haven't had the systems for the rehabilitate for the habilitation of those who are in those places. We haven't had the bandwidth in our service delivery to actually nurture those into better health. It's that privatization of the penal system and the profit in that that lessens that desire to actually have those systems to rehabilitate and put people back into, especially with victimless crimes and things of that nature, to put people back into a productive lifestyle.
And you know what else, what I think is really interesting and very cool. So my undergrad is in psychology, and I'm really, I've always been quite really interested in what mental health and how we are going about it. And I myself have, you know, of course, done my own work. I've, you know, had a therapist and so forth. However, there is this interesting movement within this, but for a long time though, mental health was very individualized. It's this concept of you have trauma or you have something.
Right. And it was DSM driven.
And we're going to fix this. But I think there's a movement now in the mental health field where there's a recognition that there are some things that are showing up that particularly anxiety is one of those that is really showing up, and suicide, where this idea of it's not the individual, it's not an individual problem. This is a human reaction to a larger issue in societal. And I think that is really quite, that movement towards, because there are still illnesses, there's still issues that are very special, individualized. Now, I must admit, me saying that as not someone who's professionally in the field, but just because I've, you know, been adjacent to it, I could be stuck to that idea simply because I still want to feel like there's individualized treatments. However, so, you know, that could be a thing. However, recognizing my own bias, but I do think that there is something to be said for there is a systemic issue societally that is causing people to feel anxiety, or is causing people to feel suicidal, or is causing people to feel whatever the thing is that's not serving them or society well.
Is it mental health?
That issue.
Is it mental health, or is it really emotional health? And we're trying to deal with things going on in the mind, and it's really got nothing to do with the mind. It has to do with our emotions and how, you know, on the one hand, you know, the 70,000 thoughts we have a day, probably half or better are all self-deprecating. Well, why? How do we manage that? How do we tune in to others and help them monitor their own thinking so that that emotional sense of not of being less than has the opportunity to rise up and at least feeling equal to, if not in some cases more than, right? When you have specific things. And
I think it could be. I think that it could be emotional health. It can be mental health. It could be a mix of both. I do think that I'm really pleased to see that there has been a movement towards not only people being willing, like the destigmatization of being able to get help, and also that there is a recognition that some of these things very well could not be individual pathologies, but really be a systemic thing. And that, I think, is a movement towards good things.
Totally agree. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, it used to be DSM driven, whether it's four or five or whatever the number is today. And for my own experience, the one psychologist I saw gave me a total, you know, spiritual awakening. My advice to you is don't talk to anybody because they're not going to stand you. And then I had an experience where my parents decided that it was that I needed to be institutionalized for a bit because I could not stop talking about this experience. And I put myself in a precarious place. I bought a couple of sets of drums, put them in my dorm room, and had to move out of the dorm in the middle of winter, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't tell them about it, and ended up getting beat up at a frat house, ended up in the emergency room. And it was like, okay, we need to give him a break. So in that, though, the psychiatrist that I talked to came straight from the DSM-4 at the time and labeled me and drugged me and did not try to understand me in one aspect of what I was attempting to explain to him as my story, as what was going on with me. There was this, oh, that's wrong. You're this, and we need to treat you with that. And, you know, and then hopefully you'll have, that will help you. And it wasn't until I actually told the doc what he wanted to hear instead of what I wanted to share, because I thought he was there for me, right? He wasn't there for me. I was there for him. And so I told him what he wanted to hear, and all of a sudden, miracle cure. And then they start weaning me off the drugs and gradually release me. Well, that's a far different story today, because people are recognizing that, yeah, there is this internal connection that people have that isn't necessarily or hasn't been addressed in the outer world appropriately, so that this nurturing can take place, so that people can actually connect with God and feel comfortable with what happens as a result, rather than feeling diminished by it.
No, absolutely.
I think that's what you're talking about in this movement of becoming more aware of that individuality and our own expression and connection of it. So how do you see that evolving into the workplace and into organizations and, for instance, even from a certain leadership perspective?
Well, you know, I will tell this, that there are companies are now investing a great deal of resources into things that in the past were not even, would not even pass mustard if you had a conversation. You know, obviously there's sort of the performative wellness stuff, you know, oh, we got yoga, blah, blah, blah. But there's also lots of large, particularly large corporations that have the budgets and obviously have a large portion of the employee base that are working for them, are, you know, really starting to provide opportunities for folks to have these types of conversations around what does it mean to be authentic? And what does it mean to be, to lead authentically? What does it mean for people to have emotional well-being and mental well-being without it just being a performative conversation? And so I do think that in the future, like, we don't really know, right? Again, back to that arc being...
We are coming out of a global kerfuffle and redesigning or reimagining, like Dennis Pataka says, we're reimagining humanity now. How do we want us to be? What do we want the future to look like? And what do we need it to look like?
I do think that, I do think it's difficult. I think every step, every inch towards something is a good thing. I think that it is a long arc, as we've talked about. And as a result, we'll see how long it might take for there to be a significant push, a significant shift. What I have seen around leaders, particularly, you know, the folks that I work with, which are owners and founders of businesses, they themselves are recognizing that they cannot, you know, do business as usual, because for their own sake, they're having a difficult time if they ignore their own inner worlds, then they begin to burn out and they aren't able to continue. So they do have to force themselves to address their own inner worlds. And then they recognize that the generation of folks that are coming into the workplace now They are expecting and demanding that there be spaces for their to for health, emotional health, spiritual health. And so they are having to then also invest in that as well. And I think that that's a good sign. You know, will there be sort of a hosing down of it, a cooling down of it? I don't know. But I will say this, that anytime there are a large number of people talking about a concept, then it has some legs. And that to me is better than not.
Absolutely. And we each contribute that. I just published my 31st title on Amazon, and it is called Navigating Holistic Growth, The Servant Leader's Guide. So in this holistic sense, not just for body, mind, spirit, planet, okay, we're all connected. You know, we are the earth. That's where we get all our nutrients from. However we receive those, they come from the earth. That's what our body is. It's of the earth. And then we have this indwelling consciousness that's from someplace else that combines. And so why is that so distant in our understanding and cognition of in how we're moving forward together? Because that seems to be a growing concern, right? How do we connect not only to ourselves, but how do we connect to the cosmos? So who are we really? How many dimensions are we on, you know? And what does this mean in the electromagnetic spectrum? What's the bandwidth? What's on each one of those regions? And there are some, there's a theory of everything that Vernon Nepi and Edward Close put out in 2010 called the Triadic Dimensional Distinction Vortical Paradigm. I know that's a weird, you know, long, elongated name. However, what they say simply is that consciousness, space, and time are tethered across 9 dimensions of consciousness. Mm-hmm. So, or in that, doesn't eliminate other dimensions, just that we have, that's the bandwidth for the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
So there are reflections of that same system throughout. So that's 9 levels there. Talk about pattern recognition, right? So this is one of those tangents I love to go off on. And if I could just have a moment, there's spiral dynamics, 9 levels of it. There's a multi-plane awareness technique that's actually an experiential journey of those 9 planes for an individual. So all of these things have this correlation. It's like they dovetail together. They're saying the same things from different perspectives. One is totally science-based. The other, on the opposite end, the multi-level or multi-plane awareness, is an experientially based one. So these spirituality and science are bridging finally, and we're able to have perhaps a common language in those. Mm-hmm. To bring us to a greater understanding and ability to evolve more intelligently than we have previously, and that the educational systems also begin to incorporate that, because we've not had that to date. We've been focusing on putting people in jobs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. That's
another discussion for another day. The concept of you know, what we are, you know, what is the future of education? What is the role of it? And what are we supposed to be doing with it? And I do think that I was talking to a good friend of mine who's in education, and I was like, you know, I said, I'm surprised that these conversations haven't spilled into the everyday prelons as of yet. And I guess a part of it is because we're still just trying to understand, you know, the world we live in as, you know, as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that, you know, there is something to be said around what's the purpose of education. Like what we want it to be.
Well, the word educate means to draw out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be something inside to throw out, right? Why don't we start looking there and actually educate rather than, you know, input all the data and just want the regurgitation of it for specifications.
Right. Yeah, that's fair. I think that's very fair.
So this all wraps together. This is all part of that, I call it an ego leap in humanity of seeking that higher intelligence, of understanding ourselves, others, how the world works, what is natural order, and how do we step into that? How do we align with who we really are in the natural sequence of our own evolutionary path, not as an individual and collectively?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how do you see this in your work? How do you see this evolving and spilling out into society from the efforts that you have, which are tremendous, by the way?
I would say that the biggest thing for me, as I see, as I observe, and I work with business owners to build their businesses, is that there are a number of these individuals that at some point didn't see themselves as being able to build a business or to build a business that could scale, because they never really thought of themselves as anything more than an employee.
Mm.
And you know, employee that had leadership skills, but still an employee. I think what you see happening now, this is a humongous, like an explosion of women-owned businesses, businesses of people of color, people who wouldn't necessarily have, maybe they might have had a business, but they thought it was just going to be a small mom and pop shop. But now they realize, oh, wait, I can
scale this, right?
That has, you know, scale. I think that's where you see that kind of owning oneself. Because I think in the end, if you begin to think that you're infinite, then you think you're infinite. And so, right.
Now, and infinite doesn't mean it doesn't have patterns, structure, procedures, processes, and everything is a process. You just have to be willing to figure out what, ask the right questions, right, to expose what that process is for each of those things. And all the answers are there. You just got to ask the right questions for the answers to pop up or to come from within. And as you mentioned,
I think that, you know, in the end, if you can get people to, if people do begin to believe that they are infinite, then they start thinking big and start thinking about big ideas. And that's what I love. That's what gets me excited. That's what I wake up in the morning every day and just like,
And with your business consulting, you see those incremental steps, right? If I can do this, what else can I do? Right.
I think it starts from the top to the bottom. So it's, what's the big idea and how does that align? What does that big idea align with one's life? And so whatever the big idea is, it must align with one's life vision. And if you have one life's vision that also is in line and aligned with one's sense of being divine, then you have a different,
where most of what the entrepreneurial,
you've got a big idea and then you begin to kind of create strategy around achieving that. And as you keep going down the funnel, you know, you begin to sort of see, on a regular, you know, inch by inch basis, what is a 15-year goal look like? What does a 1-year goal look like? What is some strategic, objectives look like? What is, you know, tactics look like? How do you measure? How do you create KPIs around it? And it just goes down. But in the end, it's really about the big idea. If you can have big ideas are the only thing that really inspire people.
Sure. So, and then the vision, mission, and then you've got to follow through with the culture that you create in the organization to fulfill that.
Yes, you do. And you know, a lot of the work that I do with people is just really being able to create strategy, being able to figure out how to then you execute that in the end. But I think you're asking about how does this concept of, you know, being connected with the divine, how is it playing out in the work that I do? It's the idea of more people showing up, starting businesses that scale and have bigger ideas, like expanding the ideas and being able to decide, I'm going to scale. I'm going to be infinite in the way that I operate. And I think that's how it shows up.
Very cool. In your explorations, what have you found that would be most worthy to share with others as far as the little details, being able to find a way on a daily basis to move into that connected space?
I think you just have to have a practice. Obviously, there's many different ways that people have done that over the, you know, humanity's existence. I do think, though, in this day and age, because of the noise, one needs to find a, have a practice that includes silence and solitude. Just because I don't think you can, you can't compete with that noise.
Or just develop a practice, perhaps, right? Because most of us are pushed and pulled by what we perceive the needs and wants are that are around us, and attempting to fulfill those instead of, and that, that's being, you know, sucked into the outer world and feeling like a leaf in the wind sometimes. So
you know, the,
how do you recenter that?
Developing a practice can, because I think there's trendy and then there's what works for you. So, you know, some people feel like, you know, their yoga practice is works for them, and that might be good for you. But it might not work for you. And if it's not, you know, there's so many people I do find now more than ever. And I think, I don't know if it's because of folks that are sort of raised on social media versus those of us that had an existence before social media, but even within the spiritual space and even within the sort of understanding your own divine sense space, there's almost an inability to decide what works for you. And I think, so if other people are doing it, then that's what should work for me, so I'm going to do that. My
point is more prescriptive rather than emotive or
yeah, because I mean we all are different. We're all so very unique. And so my point is these practices are not new. They've been around since millennia. So try various different things that might work for you to develop and to implement into your life. So if meditation is not it for you, then meditation is not it for you.
Right.
My point though is, because the world's a bit noisy and there are messages that are constantly sort of being thrown at you and pulling you, I think involving a practice where you are silent and they have some solitude would be a good idea, that you could include that in your practice. And so just because I feel that it's difficult to kind of hear the internal and to connect to the internal, because it's such a noisy world. But whatever practices work, do that, and you will know when you are getting more connected, because you'll feel the shift within you. It's not like you're going to be like, I don't know if I'm connecting or not. You'll realize it. You'll know it. And just, you know, develop a practice. I would also say too, you know, if you haven't started the process of healing, start a process of healing, you know, whether it means that you, and whatever modalities again work for you, maybe talk therapy works for you, maybe it doesn't, whatever it looks like for you, do that. Because I do think that it's very difficult for most people to live in this world and not to, you know, to not have some trauma that needs some amount of healing, some in processing. So do that, be good to yourself, do that, and then develop a practice that keeps you perpetually connecting to the divine. whatever that looks like as well.
Now, would you advise to actually look for these things or to sit with your desire of them showing up and then be aware of when they do?
Well, that's a really good question. You know, I do believe that when the student is ready, the teacher does appear. However, I think that sometimes, depending on, you know, how people are, you know, I know how I am. And, you know, the more I read and understand and seek knowledge, the more I'm able to like, oh, okay, I'm going to try this or this works or something like that. But if you decide that this is where you want to go, if you sort of make an intention to be able, look, I'm ready to really connect with my divine, then, you know, obviously I think the things pop up and show up for you because you're like, wait, I had no idea. I was walking on the street and I saw a bookstore and then there's this big book that I, you know, it's been around forever. And you're like, oh, wait, there you go. You find
and therein is the evidence of how that works, right? And so when you begin to experience that, how do you develop your faith and trust in it?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you don't have to, you know, faith is one of those things. You don't have to have a whole bunch of it. You know, you just need to have a little bit of it. And I think one deciding that, hey, you know what? I think there might be a divine that I need to connect to. Just even saying that alone is faith, right? Because you said a thing. So I think people say, oh, I don't have enough faith. Oh, I don't know about that. You know, it's about the each step moves you closer towards who you are. Because remember, you know, you are, it's not like you're out there saying, please, I need you to come to me, whatever the entity, like it's within you. It's already there. You already know what it is. It's not like a thing you got to go out there trying to find. The point is about the practices. If we weren't taught those things, same thing as we weren't taught leadership, we have to learn leadership. It's the same thing of like, what is learning what those practices are. The practices, mind you, are not, it's doing the practice is not the goal. And I think a lot of people love to be like, oh, you know, I do this and I do that and I do that. And they sort of,
it's the ritual.
The practice is not the goal. The practice is the tool that will get you connected to what is already true, that you are a divine being and you're connected to God in a real meaningful way. So it's, you know, you're not trying to be like, oh, what are all the things and have a long, you know, you only get a PhD on practices. That's not the goal here. We just want to find a couple practices that work for you, that will allow for you to then be connected and be able to get that path going. And once you're there, then, you know, keep the path going. And that's all you need to sort of, you keep cleaning the path. That's all you really need to do. We don't want to overcomplicate the process. But if you don't know the practices, if you didn't grow up in a home where, you know, you're kind of taught some different ways, if you're never exposed to these things, then of course you're going to be like, well, I really don't know what you guys are talking about. So therefore, going and reading and seeing what ancient folks did from millennia, that helps. That really does help. And it helps to put a language to it. And we all are very different in the way that we show up in the world. Some people are much more intuitive. Others are much more logical. Some people are whatever, however it works for you. There's no way of being spiritual. It's just decide what works for you and go for it.
Awesome. Carrie Ann, this has been an awesome conversation. I thank you so much. We went into the depths of how you perceive things, and I really loved how you presented that view. And it really, from my perspective, provided a very simple way for our audience to understand that process and maybe make it available for themselves too. So yes. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Zen. This has been a lovely conversation. It's not often that you do get a chance to do that. I interview quite a bit on many podcasts, but this has definitely been one that's been very unique. And
I am that horse of a different color.
You are that horse of a different color, but it's been lovely. Because I do think for whoever is listening, if you are on that journey to connect, if you know that something's missing, if you know that there's more that you would like to explore, to do it, because then if you're feeling that that's something that you wanted, that means that it's seeking you.
Absolutely. And what you seek is seeking you as well. Thank you once again, and namaste and in lock catch. And thank you for sticking with us for this episode of One World in a New World. I'm Zen Benefiel, your host. and I will see you next time.